Not sure to hear this, but you're gonna hear it. So therefore, you need to hear it. Regardless, welcome to Five Things, the Influence Edition. Why do we do anything? What is it that spurs us, that motivates, that catalyzes action? What are our motivators? What are those influences? Does money influence politics? Well, of course it does. Of course, money influences politics. Going through this wonderfully awful exercise of Senate confirmation meetings, hearings. Do you ever watch these? They are such a performative, sort of gut-wrenching, cringe exercise where the senators ask, kind of grill these nominees. And you're never going to get too much entertainment value, therefore screen time, out of, say, a Republican senator questioning a Republican nominee. They're on the same team, so that's not, there's no fireworks. Where it gets good is when you have a Republican senator and a Democratic nominee, or vice versa. You get the idea. And then, buddy, whew, let's go. Just dragging people over the coals and stomping on their reputations and tarring them with terrible, just awful things, just saying terrible things about them. Like, Mr. So and so, Miss So and so, is it true that you hate children and wish that all puppies and kittens were dead? Isn't it true? Like, no, nobody thinks that. You don't even think that that's true. Why are you saying such terrible things? That's just how it goes. Anyway, does money influence politics? And obviously it does. And obviously, it always has. It's always influenced politics. It's probably why a lot of people get into politics in the first place, and certainly why they stay in politics for as long as they do. But there's a power dynamic there also. But just the idea that money doesn't influence politics, that political donations aren't going to have some kind of influence, is an absolute preposterous thing, because money influences pretty much everything. And so, anyway, does a focus on DEI change priorities or have an influence? Of course it does. Of course it does. Just like if you were to focus all of your energy on making sure that a fire department, that everybody exceeded all of the physical tests by 50%. If that was your focus, if you focused only on making sure that your firefighters had a certain body fat percentage, if that was your sole focus, well, you would get results. So clearly, there are questions to be asked and answered about the LA wildfires, but I just don't think that it's a controversial thing that when you dedicate resources in one area, there's just not that many resources. So when you decide to section off some of those resources in the name of one thing, it just means that you're saying no to everything else. Thomas Sowell famously said that there's no solutions, there's only trade-offs. And so when you have finite resources, which we all have, when you make a decision on the allocation of a finite resource, that means you're saying yes to whatever it is you've decided to allocate it to, and no to everything else. So, is DEI responsible? Of course it's not. Of course it's not. There are so many factors that went into why it is that this natural disaster and catastrophe took place. So many things. But to say that it didn't have any influence is patently false. It is incorrect. If you're a football team and you decide to put all your resources into playing offense, well, then your offense is going to be way better than your defense is, probably. If you don't spend any time on your special teams, well, you're going to make special teams mistakes. That's how it goes. What about if you look at what is going to be happening with, well, there's just different parts of going back to government. There's a lot about our military and the Pentagon that is a black box, meaning we have no idea what's going on. The Pentagon has famously failed its audit, I think 10 times out of 10 over the last 10 years. They just haven't been able to produce or verify or validate the congressional audit. So all that means is we don't know where the money is going. And if you don't think that there are going to be abuses, then you're wrong. If you know that nobody is looking or that nobody can see what you're doing, there's going to be abuses. Versus if you know for a fact that every decision that you make and every move that you make is going to be highly scrutinized and reviewed and looked at, it's going to change behavior. It's just going to change behavior about things. So when we have finite resources that are available, as we all do, and right now we're talking about giant sums of money, we're talking about the presence and influence of money in politics, that is seemingly an endless amount of money, versus a football team, versus your home budget. If you, when you make a decision to allocate money to one thing, because your money and my money is very finite. When I make a decision to put money towards one thing, I am saying no to everything else. Again, there are no solutions. There are only trade-offs. Our most valuable resources are time, energy, attention, and money. And those are the most valuable because they are finite, which makes them precious, which makes them highly valuable. So when I make a decision that out of the universe of decisions that I have to make about what to do on a Saturday night, I say, I'm just going to watch a movie on Netflix. Okay, great. It's a good choice. That rules out all other options. You say, you know what I make? You know, our household has the ability to invest $1,000 a month. Well, how should we do that? Should we put that into our 401k? Yes. Okay, great. So we're going to put $1,000 a month into our 401k and we're going to invest it in XYZ. Okay. You make that decision. Therefore, when another opportunity to buy Bitcoin comes up, you say, well, I don't have any money left over because we made the decision to allocate our investable money, our investable resources into our 401k at work. So don't have the ability to invest in Bitcoin. That's not a right or wrong decision. It's just the realities that when we have finite, scarce resources, when we make one decision, we're ruling out every other decision. And then, so that is hopefully a pretty logical decision. Most of the decisions we make are not necessarily logical, but they're not based on logic. They are both based on emotion. Daniel Kahneman, rest in peace, Danny Kahneman, very famous psychologist who won the Nobel Prize in economics. He wrote the book Thinking Fast and Slow. One of the big takeaways in his deep dive into personal finance and why we make the decisions we make around money, one of the big takeaways that 90% of the decisions we make around money are based on emotion. 90% of the decisions we make around money are based on emotion. And I remember hearing that for the first time. I thought, well, there's no way that that's true. There's no way that 90% of my decisions are based on emotion. And then I thought about it. I'm like, oh, yeah, everything I do is based on emotion. It's based on how I feel. So what is it that moves us to action? Certainly, and with Danny, the fast part of our brain is the knee-jerk response. It's the impulse. The slow part of the brain is the logic, reasoned-based approach. A good example of this, how it shows up, is when you get a crappy message from somebody, your email, you want to fire it back. All caps, pound sand, screw off. You could fire that off, or you could say, you know what, close the keyboard, close the computer. I'll wait till tomorrow. I'm gonna sleep on this. And odds are, 9 times out of 10, you probably make the decision that I'm not going to fire off this angry, impulsive type email. So I just became curious, what are the top five? What are the five biggest drivers of how it is that we make decisions? What is it that is influencing our decision making? Because, and the thing about Kahneman is, once you become aware of the power that your emotions have on you, and you start paying attention and noticing when you are triggered and then have a response, like I get stressed out, so I buy something online, or I get anxious and I have something to eat. So that's a stimulus and a response. Once you become aware of that patterning, oh, look, I have a tendency to buy stuff when I'm sad. I have a tendency to eat when I'm really pissed, whatever, whatever it is. We all do these things. Then we can start to move more away from just that fast, knee-jerk emotional response, more towards the measured, reasonable. Now, sometimes that's good and sometimes it's bad. I'm not here to say that feelings are bad or that emotions are bad, because they're not. I'm a pretty emotional guy. But that doesn't mean that I want the tail to wag the dog, meaning, I think you know what it means. Just because I feel a certain way, I don't want that to totally potentially derail my behavior for the rest of the day. Or I don't want a feeling that is passing, as most feelings are, to blow up my budget because I overspend on something, or I go off my plan, or my diet, or my exercise routine, or whatever it might be. So what is it that influences our behaviors? How do we get down to the core of that? And the value in it is a deeper understanding of it helps us to be more in control. I think that that's certainly of value. But everything touches everything, because everything is interrelated. We don't live in vacuums. I don't have my personal life right over here and my business life over here, and then my friendships over here and my work colleagues or acquaintances over here. Everything is sort of one big, beautiful melting pot. That's what it is. It's a great, big, beautiful melting pot. So no solutions, only trade-offs for these kinds of decisions, but just having a good understanding of what it is that influences these decisions, what drives behavior. So top five, let's go through five things, because there's a lot. There are a lot of different things that really influence our behavior, but top five from my perspective. I'm open to a conversation, or you could certainly quibble with these, but peer pressure, social influence, cultural norms, we'll put that at numero uno. Number one, social influence. We are social creatures. Our brains are wired for community and for acceptance. There's that very famous Harvard Grant study that followed people. I think it's still ongoing for over 100 years at this point, trying to figure out what it is that makes for a happy life. And the answer was, it's our social connections, which certainly makes sense. I believe that our human interactions, our interactions with others, that life is the sum of those. So the better that we get, the better our life will be, so on and so forth. But we're also wired to be accepted, because we don't want to be kicked out of the tribe. Think about way back in the day, like thousands of years ago, if it was just you out there wandering the plains on your own, your odds of survival are pretty low, versus if you are part of a larger community, band together, pool resources kind of thing, protect each other, keep each other safe, companionship, friendship, probably going to be a healthier, happier person. So if you think about how peer pressure shows up over the course of your life, maybe when you were 14 or 15 or 18 or 19 or whatever, you started smoking cigarettes and drinking some beer, just doing what friends do, maybe you even did some drugs. I don't know. I don't know what you were doing. Don't get mad at me. It's not my fault that you'd made those decisions. There's also social proof, which is going on here. When we see other people doing it, we assume that it's correct. Maybe that's what's going on in our government. When all these congressmen and women and senators are doing what they're doing, they all seem to be doing a lot of the same things. It's like, well, they're doing it, so I guess it's okay. conformity. So I think that a big part of getting past this is just like, it's like your mom said back in the day, if everybody jumped off a bridge, would you jump off a bridge too? Would you? Would you jump off a bridge too? Would you also do that? Are you a lemming that's going to jump off that mountain because all the other lemmings are doing it? No, of course not. Of course you wouldn't do that. You are somebody who watches the show or listens to the show. So you're a really smart person. Okay, good job. Number two, money. Money, 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 money. Financial incentives and economic pressures. Whew, this is real, obviously. Money touches everything. Every aspect of our lives. Without it, we are in big trouble. And this, of course, touches the last one, too. All keeping up with the Joneses. We need it for basic survival. We need it for fulfillment. We need it for enjoyment. You know, there are so many people that... I think that lawyers are probably a pretty good example of this, because I don't know that there's too many happy lawyers out there. I bet that this is probably true of all professionals. 80% are unhappy and 20% are probably happy. But we are trading our happiness, sometimes our saneness and our peace of mind for a paycheck. And we feel like we are wage slaves and trapped in a gilded cage. And isn't that the reality? So, loss aversion is a real thing. Losing money, or the prospect of losing money, hurts twice as bad. Twice as bad as potentially gaining it. The thought of losing $100 hurts twice as much as the prospect of finding $100. So, our ability to delay gratification is also a difficult thing. But a really, 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 really important thing. We don't want to lose. We don't want to lose. So the work here, the work around, is to get to the point where money is not the goal, which you all intellectually know. We all intellectually know that I don't want to have money for the sake of having money. I want money because it's a tool for getting me what I really want, which is freedom and flexibility. It's the ability to do things on my terms, to buy the things that I want, to have the experiences that I want. So it's a tool versus a thing. And if I can get to that point, then I can get to the point where I can overcome the desire to spend all of it right now and actually put a little bit away for my future self. So understanding the role that money has on us, understanding the role that... when we perceive that other people have money or having a much better time than we are, how we reconcile that. I think that that's a pretty interesting thing. Number three, sex. Sex. Desires for relationship, companionship, and reproduction. We are, our biological imperative is, or at least it used to be, to continue our DNA, to keep the bloodline going, to produce little yous and little me's. How strong is your impulse to do that? Or is it just sex? Is it ever just sex? That's an interesting one, isn't it? But it's a driver. It is a big driver. Why we do these things, why we earn the money so we can become or perceive to be more attractive to the opposite sex or the same sex. So you are more attractive to whoever it is that you're interested in attracting. How's that? Let's do that. Intimacy, companionship, all these things. We don't want to be lonely. So that certainly drives our behaviors, doesn't it? Reason that we wear the clothes that we do and carry ourselves and speak the way that we do and pursue the interests and hobbies that we do. Man, is it money or is it sex that's a bigger driver? That's an interesting one. It all is kind of touching each other, isn't it? See what I did there on accident? I made a bit of a pun. Talking about how all three of these are interrelated, but I said touching when I was talking about the sex part. Anyway, all right, Let's see. Number four, I believe that we're on number four, is power and status. Control, authority. This is a really interesting one. We're talking about what influences us, and now we're talking about influencing others. We want to have a position of influence, of prestige, of esteem. We want to be leaders or role models or stakeholders in our workplaces, in the communities, our social circles, everywhere. People are constantly, for lack of a better term, jockeying for control or making moves. It's not a surprise that Succession was one of the most popular shows in recent memory. And isn't that what that show was all about? Of course, it was all about money also and everything else that I've been talking about. We strive for influence in all of these things. We buy luxury brands to signal our influence and our status. We do lots of different things. So, which is so basic, such a basic thing, and very human. Some of the basic things are, that's just sort of at that base level, what a lot of the human experience is about, is that. But, and then you think about the people that we hold to the highest esteem are not that at all, which is, I guess, why we hold them to the highest esteem. Jesus, I don't think Jesus owned anything. Did the Buddha own anything? No, he rejected. He was a prince. He was the richest. He was heir to the throne of the richest place around. He turned his back on it, walked away, went the opposite direction, and then eventually became the Buddha. Mother Teresa, she ballin'? Was she popping bottles? No, of course not. So your spiritual gurus, your leaders, the people that we sit at their feet and listen. Was Socrates a rich man? I don't believe that he was. You get the idea. So interesting. So how do we get to that point where we are self-actualized? Where our net worth, or the car that we drive, the neighborhood that we live in, where our kids go to school, the places that you go to dinner, the country club you go to, defines you versus who you are, versus what you understand, versus your thinking. How do we get to that place? Interesting. Number five. Our moral frameworks, our ethical beliefs, our integrity, the code that we live by, our values. There you go. Are you influenced by your values? I believe that our values are the lens through which we take in information, process it, and make decisions about things, which is why they're so important. Because if you have no moral code, moral compass, no values in place, then you are essentially rudderless. You have no plan. What a budget is a plan for your money, and it's guidelines for your spending and your savings, how you interact with money. Your values are, in a sense, what your budget is, right? Why is religion such an important thing? Why has every culture across recorded history of humanity had religion? Why do you think that is? Because it gives us the values. It hands down values. It tells you how to live a right, just life. It's why it's important. Can you have your own values? Of course you can. Do you have your own values? I don't know. Only 3% of people have written goals. And I bet 99% of people understand that you should have written goals, but only 3% do. So I bet you understand intellectually the importance of having values, having a moral code, and living by those values and that code. But I don't know if you've done it. I don't know if you can tell me what your core values are. Can you tell me what your beliefs are? I think that it's of value to be able to do that. And so don't forget, I've created a course called, wait for it, the Values Course, which will help you to do exactly that. I've also created the Goals Course, and I made this a couple years ago. It's still excellent, even though it's a couple of years old. And of course, I wrote the Purpose Book, your guide to an examined and aligned life, that will take you through the goals exercise and the purpose exercise, or goals and values rather. And you can get that for free. You can get it on my website, but you can find it in the show notes. You can just click on it and get a copy of it, because I think it is such an important thing, and it will influence how we make decisions. It will influence our actions and influence who it is that we are as people. So integrity is doing the right thing when nobody is watching. Character. Integrity is character and action. So it's knowing what is of value and what matters, and then acting on that. So doing things the right way, doing the right thing, even when you don't have to, or at your own peril, at your own risk. Whistleblowers are a perfect example of this, and we're seeing a fair number of these people step forward at massive personal loss to them to raise the red flag. Julian Assange, Edward Snowden, those two are come to mind. These human beings blew up their entire lives to expose the truth, to surface the truth, to expose corruption. And we're seeing a lot of this right now. We are seeing a lot of people scurrying around. And anyway, but very, very interesting. Living a moral life, if we're not doing that, that's obviously not a good thing. So what would Jesus do? What does Islam tell you to do? What does Judaism tell you to do? What does Hinduism tell you to do? What does Buddhism tell you to do? What does Sikhism tell you to do? There are moral codes, moral frameworks that have been executed on and lived by for as long as, again, human beings have been around. It's not a surprise that the Bible is the most read book in the history of humanity. And it's of value. So what is it of influence? So the whole idea, and I talk so much about this and think so much about it. Number one is we have to know what matters. And then I want you to look and say, okay, well, where's the evidence that that actually matters to me? And the whole idea is that we want to understand what it is that we want, who we are, and then align all of our decision-making to that. And understand that I am influenced by all of these factors. There are so many factors that are pulling me and pushing me in certain directions. I have so many wants. I've got biological imperatives that are pushing and pulling me. I've got peer pressure that is happening to me all the time. I've got financial desires and questions to answer and pressures. I've got so many different things that are at work that are influencing me. They're pulling at my thoughts. There's so many different things out there that want to extract my most valuable resource. There's so many different things out there working constantly to extract your most valuable resources. And so it's incumbent upon us to be able to understand these things, to be able to understand and recognize when it is that we are falling prey, falling victim, being influenced, being pulled in a certain direction. And then to just pump the brakes and say, okay, that's fine. I feel like this right now, but I'm not going to act on it because it's not what I've decided are the best use of my resources. So there you go. Honorable mention, survival instinct, fear and self-preservation. This is a strong one. Stay alive, buddy. Curiosity, personal growth. I am such a proponent of getting better. That's what the whole deal is about here on the show. Get better, live how you want. So, addictions, habits. Yeah, well, that's certainly going to influence behavior if I'm addicted to, if I have an addiction. It's certainly going to influence my behavior. In fact, if you ever want to see somebody who is willing to do anything to get what they want, it's a drug addict. They would literally, literally do anything to get drugs. There was that wonderfully horrible show about the Sackler family and the opioids. What was it called? It followed a handful of people. And it was so sad, so well done. That's just evidence and showing you just how dangerous, in this example, opioids were. What was the name of that medication? It's going to bug me. And it's obviously you're screaming it right now because you know the answer to it. But I'm not going to be able to pull it out of my head. We all have cognitive biases. So we've got blind spots. So that's number four in the honorable mention piece. And then, of course, number five, hedonism, comfort and pleasure, desiring pleasure, seeking comfort. These are massive motivators, especially when we're tired and we are burned out. I know that I'm certainly drawn to that. Want to make it all go away sometimes. So everything influences everything. Part of the human experience is just, it's realizing that, embracing it. Again, I'm the last thing, well, maybe not the last thing. I'm not interested in trying to not have feelings. I'm not interested in not being influenced. What I am interested in is making as sound decisions as I possibly can. And I'm not advocating, nor do I advocate for some kind of an infinity war where I make every possible decision perfectly. I don't want my dietary decisions to be perfect. I don't want my exercise decisions to be perfect. I don't want my free time decisions to be perfect. But I wanted to get to about 80% right. So B minus level, 80-20. If I can get right, it's not really the 80-20, but you get the idea. If I can be right on my dietary, if I can be right on my decision-making 80% of the time, that 80% of my decisions are aligned with what is most important to me, well, then I'll let the chips fall where they may on the other 20%. Okay, it's okay to blow things off every once in a while. It's okay to have some pizza and some ice cream and some beer or whatever you're into. It's okay to Netflix and chill. It's just not okay to do it most of the time. So there you go. Five things. Everything influences everything. As always, you do your part by doing your best.